Hello, you're listening to Career Conversations, a series that's part of the Food Matters Live podcast. I'm Alicia Roche, a chef and food journalist, and together we'll meet experts in cooking, mixology, the environment, psychology, branding, social media, and all sorts, as we learn about the surprisingly varied roles that go way beyond the kitchen. My guest today is April Deer, who is a Senior Product and Packaging Development Manager for Asda and responsible for a very large team. She talks us through the process of getting a product idea from the drawing board to the supermarket shelf, and she admits that coming up with a foot-long pig in blanket is still one of her greatest achievements in food. I'll be back at the end with some key info about getting into food product development, but for now, settle in and enjoy the podcast.
I moved my desk to the window. So I was sitting when I moved in over here and I was like, why do I look so bad on all the Zooms? And then I was like, oh, you need to be by the window, like natural light.
No, anyone who's listening and is wondering what April looks like, she's incredibly glamorous. She looks like Elsa from Frozen.
She's got long
Rapunzel gold locks.
I'll take that.
So hello, April Deer. Can you just tell us what you do? Like, what's your job title?
So my current job title is I'm a Senior Product Development Manager. I manage a team of developers of all different levels who do all of the product development in Asda across meat, fish, poultry, anything in a fridge, and vegetables and frozen.
So a new vegan sausage range, if I use that as an example.
Yeah.
How long would it take from the development chef in your test kitchen or the person who first comes up with the idea? How long does it take for the product idea to become reality and sit on a shelf?
In an ideal world, if we're doing a big project, I would like to have at least 12 months. That gives you enough time to do any work beforehand, real research into the consumer that you already have, consumer you're trying to target, what the rest of the country is doing, food service and globally what's happening, and also who you want to be and how you want to innovate in that space. It's a huge piece of work before you even touch a product, before you even taste anything or cook anything. And then you go through the development of it, who your suppliers are going to be, all of the tweaks and changes you want to make. And then there's the actual launch part of it, where it has to go from a manufacturing point of view, their whole process, and from our point of view, our whole process. Now, realistically, most things probably can go through, do go through in about 6 months, most of the stuff you see on shelf. And then there'll be some extreme circumstances where someone's seen something, I've got to have it, I've got to launch it at a very high point. And I've seen some products be launched in a matter of weeks.
I was going to say, because it must be frustrating when you've had a hot tip or you've got a really good gut feeling about what's going to be the next big trend and you've got to wait nearly 12 months to get it on the shelves.
You have to really try and keep things under your hat as well. And I think Christmas is the biggest space that everyone plays into that. Obviously, it's the time where we all concentrate on food so much more. And, you know, within my previous roles, we would have been signing off Christmas 2023. We were working on, you know, last summer. That's the reality of how long we actually think about it and go into it. And it does get leaked sometimes, but, you know, it's a bit of fun as well, isn't it? Like, ultimately, it is food and it's a bit of fun within the industry. So, yeah, it can be frustrating, the time frame, but there's also the element that you want to get it right, don't you? So you want the time to be able to execute it correctly.
And so is it part of your role to stay on top of trends and look at what's going on in the industry, even on a kind of micro level?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you would naturally want to within my role. Like all of us, all of the developers within my space would all be foodies. My background's a chef as well. So that's where I've come from. And it's what you do for fun anyway, isn't it? Looking at it and looking at trends and what's happening and wanting to try it and putting your own twist on it. It's a day-to-day interest that we keep up, but also something that we may specifically concentrate on. There might be something as a retailer we're like, right, we're really going to go after and be known for this area. And then there would be a deep dive that go into it. And in the same vein, we have innovation teams who that is their entire job. You know, I get to do it as part of my role. And that's what's really fun about my role is you get to work with lots of different stakeholders. But there will be areas where all they do is look at innovation.
I love it. These are the crazy, nutty professors of the business who come up with all the ideas.
Yeah, they absolutely are. They're a lot of fun, those people. And, you know, they're traditionally they're chefs as well. So they're taking things that are from what you would create in a kitchen. And then part of our role is to find a manufacturer who can, on a very large scale, create something as close as possible to what was there in the first place.
Now, I've got a big confession to make, April. I am not an Asda shopper. I think it's just convenience more than anything else. I just don't have one near
me. It's okay. You might be in a few years. Fingers crossed. That's the goal.
What delicious products or kind of standout products might lure me into the shop? I hear your vegan range is pretty amazing.
It's pretty big, yeah. I mean, I think the thing with a vegan range, I think for everyone, is it's such a rapidly expanding range. And that's what's really exciting and actually very unique about it. I'm lucky enough to look after that within my area too. There's so much room for innovation. So there's so much room for excitement. Whereas if you go to an area that has been established for a very long time, it's quite hard to innovate in that space because so much of it's already been done. Mm-hmm. My background for the last few years has been meat. So I've worked very heavily in meat environments. And they've been there for a long time. If you're working on ham, for example, ham's been around forever. You know, it's one of the most highly penetrated categories that there are. So to try and innovate in that space can be quite challenging. Whereas if within meat-free, it's so new and it's so booming. There's so many different things that you can do with it. So it's quite an exciting space. And it's good because Asda really get after it actually and launch a lot of products within it. And, you know, we will continue to do that.
Is there anything that you've helped bring to market that you're really proud of? It could be in this role or in another role previously.
There is something that I am really proud of, and it's a bit silly.
Go
but
on.
The reason I'm proud of it is because it's created so many fun conversations outside of work. I was in with a company called ABP, and I worked in a site where we made sausages. The only reason I worked there is because that's where I grew up, and they had a site, and I finished uni, and I applied for a job, and I got one there. I just fell into it, as most people do in the meat industry. And I made sausages, and we were doing a lot of fun contracts with Aldi at the time. It's when Aldi were, it was maybe 5-6 years ago, so it's when it was really kicking off, and we were doing lots of fun stuff. And I was creating in the kitchen. I used to do this a lot, be there quite late at night, and just kind of be looking at different things, and like much like you do, you know, as a chef, what do I want to pair together? What's going to work? What's different? What's new? It's exciting. And I ended up getting a sausage that was a foot long and wrapping bacon in it.
What?
And I was like, we can do a foot-long pig in blanket. That feels so simple, but so right. And then my factory told me that I wasn't, you know, they were a bit like, we can't do this. We showed it to Aldi and they loved it. So we were like, great, we're going to launch it. And we did. Now, other people did get wind of it, actually, within the industry. And other people did try and launch it at pace. So that was a bit fun in the environment of the industry. People were kind of finding out about it. But when it came out, it was just like that really jokey, like you've got a foot long pig in blanket, and there was all this Lad Bible articles and people were like tagging me in it and stuff. So
I remember, yeah, this foot long sausage, it went everywhere. It got really big media.
Like it's such a simple concept as well, which are always the best ones, aren't they? It's always the one where you're like, oh yeah, that's so right. And everyone had a lot of fun with it.
The foot long sausage, what a legacy, April. Now, you started off as a chef. That was your very first job?
It was, yeah, I know. And we're going to have a bit of a moment here. Maybe this is why I did my hair. But I've got a bit of a girl crush. And I have to tell you, when I got the phone call about this podcast, when I found out it was you, I was like, oh my God, this is a moment. I'm going to have to be really well behaved. Because my age was the age that like properly caught the TV chef boom. Jamie Oliver was like the man to me, you know, when he was the Naked Chef, it was everything. And I loved food. I've always absolutely loved food. And it was always kind of my real escape. And I remember watching the TV chef programs and being in my kitchen and like putting everything in pots, like weighing things into pots so I could like pretend to be a TV chef. And then when 15 came out, I was like, this is the best program I've ever watched in my life, because I was like, just wanted to be the people on 15. And I'll always remember when they were doing the like recruitment for it and they blindfolded you. And then they were like smelling it, like, what is this? What is this? And I do it with my daughter, and I've done it with her since she was born. And I think it's the influence from that, because I was like, that's such a skill. That's so amazing. And so now my daughter, the whole time she's been growing up, I like put herbs into her face and be like, what is this? And she'd be like, rosemary.
Amazing. Well, April, I wish you'd applied for the show, because you would have been bloody brilliant on it. We'd have loved to have had you.
I wish I had. I went to the restaurant when it opened.
Did you? I probably cooked your supper that night.
I know. Massive fangirl moment, yeah.
Oh, I hope it was good, what you had to eat.
It was. Oh, it was. It was great. It was such a lovely experience. I really enjoyed it. And it was such a good influence for me as well. Then I started working in kitchens when I think I was like 13, you know, just like doing pots and stuff. And then they let you do a few desserts. Mm-hmm. And then once you've done desserts for a while, they let you do starters. And then I worked in kitchens the whole time I was a teen. And then I had my daughter when I was 19, when I had had her, just 19. And I continued to work in kitchens at, you know, a good high level, but obviously as a single mum with a baby, it didn't really work out. And I was a bit like, oh, I probably need to think about something that's a bit more Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. And that's how I ended up ultimately going to uni and ending up in this role.
So I guess when you were in kitchens, it was a bit like when I was in kitchens. It was that time when, especially at Michelin level, it was mostly male dominated. There was quite a lot of testosterone flying around. You know, you're this gorgeous blonde lady. Did you get a lot of stick? Did you experience any sexism?
Definitely, yeah. And I think when you first go in, especially when it's kind of just the external, what they can see, you have to earn your stripes, don't you? There is a lot of rough stuff. And I think I tell the stories now, like to my daughter, especially, you know, I was talking once and they threw a pepper pot into the boiling water so it's flashing my face and, you know, having chopping boards thrown at you and stuff. But you were used to it, weren't you? And it was normal and you put up with it. You'd never put up with it now. Can you imagine, especially in a corporate environment?
No.
But I think I personally took on a persona as well within the environment that probably makes you look like you're tough, doesn't it? And you're not scared to do things. And I remember my favorite job was always, you know, like the crabs and the langoustines, like ripping them apart and doing them. And the guy would come in from hunting and pass me a pheasant and I'd be like, fine. And you just do it, wouldn't you? You'd just be trying to portray yourself like that. And you get into the persona. But maybe that prepared me for the meat industry too, because factories are definitely not like that. But from a, you know, a language perspective and a being tough, it definitely does teach you a lot about that.
My great hope is that things have changed for the better. It was only about 4 years ago I was still doing shifts in restaurants and it had changed a lot for the better. There were many more women around, lots more diversity in the kitchen, lots more flexible working.
Oh, really? Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah, less of this macho nonsense going on, but I still think it does go on. And I just think it's sad when I hear that story because it makes me feel like women have to behave in a different way just to be accepted in a sort of tough environment. And I'm so delighted that you got your way out of that and found a whole new career. If we go back to Brighton, what were you studying there? Was it anything to do with food?
Yeah, I did food and culinary arts. So it was actually working in the kitchen and culinary skills. And then the other parts of it was like, you know, nutrition, ways in which to own and run a business. And then some marketing as well, which was really fun and really exciting. I actually really enjoyed that part of it. I never knew that my job existed. Mm-hmm. And I never knew that you could work in marketing in food and actually deliver the food to the shelves and all of those roles that were kind of referenced. And there's also so many roles in which you could test it out and then figure out which part of it you do like. You can love food, but actually the bit that really sets you on fire is how you make it safe, the microbiological side of it. Or you could love food, but the bit that really sets you on fire is actually how to make it, how to make tons and tons of it a week, and you can work on operations. You know, there's so many parts to it. That's something that I'm really passionate about, is kind of letting younger people understand all those different parts. And I feel like I'm quite lucky in that my job now weaves through all of those stakeholders, so I can try and show people through my role all the different areas that you could do it in, because product development starts at the beginning and finishes at the end, so you touch base with all of these people along the way. And that's what I've tried to initiate with that project Feed Your Future that I've started, is so that you can show people all the different points. They go, oh right, well I like that bit, I'll get off here.
You just mentioned Feed Your Future. It's a scheme that you've helped set up to encourage young people into the industry. How did it all come about? Who's helped you set it up, if anyone?
So what actually happened is there's a company called Meat Business Women, which is very big in the meat world. And what it does is it brings women together in the meat industry, gives us a sense of community, helps us with learning. And I would encourage everyone to join the membership if you can. And they do an award called the One to Watch, which I've always known about. You do if you work in the meat industry. Whoever gets nominated, it's always a big chit chat in the industry, you know. And I decided to apply for it and then got shortlisted, which I didn't expect at all. So that was quite shocking. And then they told me they were going to interview me. And one of the questions they'd asked me in the application was, what's the biggest threat to the meat industry, in your opinion?
Vegans. joking, vegans.
No. But you're totally right. Like, that's the most obvious answer, is the impact we're having on the environment. That's the first thing that comes to mind. That's the first thing that everyone's concentrating on. However, for me, personally, over the previous couple of years, like, I've been trying to recruit, and I did end up recruiting an amazing team at my old job. They're absolutely fantastic. So for me, that was a big thing. And that also links into the sustainability and the vegan message, because if we don't get in young, bright people, we're not going to be able to move at the pace that we need to move at, because it is under a spotlight, the meat industry, in a massive way for what it's doing to the planet. And we need younger people with bright ideas who are truly passionate about this, and they are. This is one of the main things that people say to me in their interviews is, what's your sustainability message? We need them in the industry to be able to continue to move and evolve. So I kind of had sat and thought about it one Sunday afternoon, and I thought, well, actually, what would be really great is if we could go to schools, to kind of sixth form students, and say, here's a project that we've started. It's with the meat factories. You'll be paired up with experts in the field, and you can create a product from scratch with the help of the category team, as in the front end marketing and the innovation team. And then you can pitch it to a retailer. And then if you win, you can launch it. And throughout that process, you'll have exposure to finance, exposure to operations, exposure to technical, and you can kind of have the conversations with these people who are real experts. And then that might make them think, oh, do you know what? Actually, I'll go and do an apprenticeship there. So that was my idea.
I was going to say, I need to pause you there, because what, you just came up with this whole idea on your own, implemented it, it now exists thanks to you. It sounds amazing, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
How did you ever doubt you were going to be named the one to watch?
Because you do, don't you? Like, you just, you don't realise your own capability. I then kind of came down from cloud nine and was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to actually make this project happen, aren't I? And then I ended up speaking to pretty much all of the directors at Cranswick and this COO, which was obviously fantastic exposure. Again, terrifying. And they were all like, yeah, this is great. Yes. And I was like, oh shit, this is great. Right, I'm going to have to do it. And hats off to them. Really, really got behind it. So contacted the schools, put the proposals together, put a team together, you know, got people in marketing, people who are specifically there for like learning development, who already work with schools as well. Some grads got involved to like do the social media and things like that. And then I handed my notice in.
Oh.
So I was like, I'm really sorry, but this job that I have literally had stuck on my wall for the last 5 years has come up and they've offered it to me.
Oh, sorry.
But I'm gonna have to go, and I feel terrible and blah, blah, blah. But you had conversations again, you know, at a director level, and they were like, do you still want to do it? And I was like, yeah, I still want to do it. Do you want to do it? And they were like, yeah. So we're like, great, let's crack on. You know, you're in a retailer now, so that makes it easier as well, because we can present to your retailer. And I was like, absolutely.
Oh, good. Nice collaboration.
Yeah. So that's worked out well. So it's carried on. So the guys at Cranswick have had one day, they've had the schools in already, which is, they've done such a good job. And they've really taken these students on this journey of, these are the things that we do now. What do you think we should do? These are all the considerations. So the person who looks after, you know, the category, the customer part of it has been like, have you thought about this? Have you done this? Done lots of different exercises, took them in the factory, took them in the kitchen. And then they're coming back on Wednesday, and they'll have another session where they're in the kitchen. They actually make it, they taste it, they want to make any tweaks to it. Then they're going to cost it, and then I'm going to go as well. And then I'll do the kind of retailer piece, have the conversation with them and meet them and stuff. And, you know, the schools are really into it, and Cranswick's really into it. And hopefully it will have the output that is desirable. And then ultimately, yeah, if they like it, and then hopefully the schools kind of promote it as well, it means that people will actually think, oh, there's apprenticeships I can go and do in, not just in operations, not just in butchery, but in NPD, which is what I do, new product development or innovation or in technical or in marketing or in finance or in procurement. That's the goal. And hopefully it's not a 1 year thing. Hopefully we continue to do it. And it has the desired effect, which is just like letting everyone know the abundance of roles that are available in the industry.
It's me again. So that was April, who, just like me, started off as a professional kitchen chef. She spent many years working in the meat industry and is a huge advocate for women in butchery and the industry at large, and smashing down stereotypes. April, for example, is incredibly glamorous. You would never guess how many years she's spent in kitchens or on factory floors. April is enjoying the way that the meat industry is being challenged, with vegan and flexitarian diets sweeping the nation. It means it's forcing product and packaging developers to continue to come up with amazing new flavours and ideas. Getting into a role like April's, it's still never a bad idea to start off in kitchens or in any place where your CV can show that you have a passion for food and cooking. April got a culinary arts degree before getting into new product development roles. A junior new product developer might start on around £28,000 a year or over 30, depending on the company and the scale of the job. And an NPD role is still a good route into product and packaging development, which is what April now does. Yes, it takes years to get to April's level, but networking, helping others as an award-winning mentor, and entering competitions has really helped to raise her profile and get her noticed. A top product developer managing a team can earn up to £100,000 a year, so it's a great career. Thank you so much to April for taking the time to speak to us passionately about this industry, and thank you for listening. Until next time, goodbye.